just like one dig, you know, the idea would be, well, how about if we just roll one truck out there? One truck in the neighborhood, one episode, streamlined, go.
Welcome to episode 193 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. When a community chooses to deploy a fiber network, it's no small undertaking. Planners must first complete a number of tasks before 1 foot of fiber can be buried or strung from utility poles. In Louisville, Kentucky, where Google Fiber has considered expansion, an issue has come up regarding utility poles and rights of providers. The debate has shined a light on One Touch Make Ready, policy designed to hasten preparation of utility poles while still respecting the concerns of utility companies that own or use the poles. Chris sought out Ted Smith, Chief Innovation Officer for the City of Louisville, to talk about One Touch Make Ready. Chris and Ted also expand the conversation to talk about the city's creative approach to improving connectivity for residents of all income levels and ways they're pushing the boundaries of innovation. Now here are Chris and Ted Smith, Chief Innovation Officer from Louisville, Kentucky.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with Ted Smith, the Chief Innovation Officer for the City of Louisville. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're excited to talk to Louisville. I've actually long known about Louisville as a basketball city. I understand that you do some other things well. Why don't we start by just having you give us a little details for people who aren't familiar with your community. What sort of things is Louisville known for?
You probably do know Louisville for basketball, but you should certainly know us for the Kentucky Derby, the most famous 2 minutes of sport that occurs every year. You may know the Louisville Slugger Bats. I'm sure many of you know the importance that the bourbon industry has had in the world in the last few years. And, you know, we are the home to bourbon. It's sort of the Champagne region of France. We are that for bourbon. So, yeah, and, you know, and on the business side, I mean, we have a really diverse and exciting economy. You know, we're, you know, home to Humana, UPS Worldport, you know, so the majority of packages leaving and coming into the country for UPS are coming through here. And there's a great set of related kinds of economic activities. We're about 750,000 people in a merged city-county, and that's important for those that keep track of, you know, what's going on in sort of mid-sized cities, cities that made the decision to bring together in a consolidated form their city and county. You know, generally have done very well in the last few decades. And, you know, we've certainly done well, you know, operating like that.
And as Chief Innovation Officer, I think one of your jobs is going to be to try and make it more high tech and friendly to internet style innovation, you know, internet companies and that sort of thing. So, you know, what are some of the things that you're focused on to make Louisville more friendly for those high tech companies?
There's a wide range of things that run the spectrum from, you know, our infrastructure, if you will, you know, what's the absolute fabric. And, you know, I'm spending a lot of my time these days on broadband internet. But, you know, it also runs all the way over to, you know, kind of the human capital side. You know, we have a thriving maker community here, a very large makerspace. And, you know, that culture of tinkering, hacking, breaking, making, you know, is also a related and important part of this whole thing. So we're really trying to bring an ecosystem of, you know, technology and creativity together here. And there are a lot of pieces to that.
The main thing that I think people have seen lately in Louisville was that you're one of the first communities and possibly the very first to embrace a policy idea called One Touch Make Ready, which should make it easier for anyone who wants to deploy fiber on poles to be able to do that. Before we get into that too much, I just wanted to note that, you know, we scheduled this call before there was a lawsuit, and I understand that you're not at liberty to talk about anything related to the lawsuit. So if listeners are interested, we're sorry, but we're going to talk more about the policy stuff than any of the lawsuit activities. What problems did Louisville note in terms of needing to be corrected with a new policy?
A lot of the focus for large area infrastructure, you know, work. You know, think of it, it's capital construction work, right? You're building something. And then the focus becomes, you know, what are the what are the barriers to, you know, being able to do business in a community? And you really do focus on just the way things work, right? How does permitting work, and, you know, how does franchising work? And you know, there's a lot of wonky stuff that I wouldn't expect anybody who listens to your show to care about, really. But sooner or later, you do run into, well, you know, how does your city operate as it relates to the public rights of way? And many will be familiar with this idea of one dig policies, you know. So if you're in downtown Boston and somebody ripped open a block of roadway, you would hope that while they've got the road open, they're going to be working on everything that's down there that is scheduled or needs to be worked on, right? So that'd be the gas lines, that'd be the water line, that'd be the electric, a number of things that are in the roadway, right? And you would hope they would do that all at once and then close the road up, and then it might be a long time before they need to open the road again. And so those are called one dig policies, and many cities have one dig policies where they do coordinate, you know, the work of the utilities so that there's minimal disruption to the community and improves overall safety in the community. Well, when you think about aerial attachment poles, there's a similar idea, and it's called One Touch Make Ready. And there's a great white paper that the Fiber to the Home Council put out a couple of months ago, you know, that really describes how much safer it can be for a community to not have five or six trucks rolling out to a pole, a utility pole, each one, you know, moving one line a few inches, and then another truck coming out and moving their line a few inches, all to get to a place where the newest attacher can put their line on. And so, you know, just like one dig, you know, the idea would be, well, how about if we just roll one truck out there, and we have an accredited certified technician who's able to move everyone's line to make room for the new line and go ahead and attach it and drive away. So one truck in the neighborhood, one episode, one interaction, streamlined, go. And so that really is the idea behind One Touch Make Ready.
Well, and I think one of the things that people may not be aware of is that for the most part, when this sort of work is being done, it is contract crews. You know, it's not someone who's literally getting a paycheck from AT&T or from Comcast or any of those big companies. They're a crew of local people that those big companies and local companies might contract with. So what you're doing to some extent, I think, is you're basically finding common crews that everyone trusts to work with and just having them do it at once rather than, you know, rolling that truck multiple times.
At the end of the day, you know, in our community, these poles are owned by private companies. You know, in our community, they're owned by our electric and gas utility and by AT&T. And so those poles are their property, their private property. And pole attachment, you know, having the ability to attach to their pole is actually governed, you know, by, you know, their pole attachment policies and contracts. And you have to pay for lease space on attachment. And so when you get to this issue of, you know, who's doing the work, you know, I want to be 100% clear. The only people that can do work on poles in our community are our contractors or, you know, or labor that is approved by that utility. You know, the ordinance that we passed wasn't to say that, well, now anybody can climb up this pole and put a wire on. I mean, that's definitely not what we're saying. We're saying the pole owners have decided who is credentialed to be on their poles, on their equipment. And from that list of contractors, technicians, some new attacher is going to have to select, you know, to do the work or have their own workforce accredited by that pole owner. And so I know this seems a little bit in the weeds, but it's important to know because a lot of people have misunderstood this to be, you know, now the government's, you know, asking to have anybody come up and do whatever they want on our poles. I mean, that's not at all the case. But, you know, we really are working with respect to the way that attachment is governed today. And we're just asking for, you know, the common sense of, you know, let's let that technician move everyone's line, not just touch the one line that they might have been originally dispatched for.
And I'm glad that you bring up that the city of Louisville doesn't own the poles in this case. I think that's an interesting piece. And can you say a little bit about why the city of Louisville has a say over the poles? We have talked previously about the right-of-way and how it works, but I think maybe you could give us a very brief refresher of it.
if you look at the ordinance that was passed, you know, what we're asking for is poles that are in our public rights of way. You know, we're asking for essentially a standard of work for those poles in our rights of way. And so, you know, it really is just a matter of, we're really trying to streamline and improve the safety and efficiency of operations in public rights of way. And so, you know, I understand that the poles are privately owned, and that's fine. But, you know, they're, you know, this policy applies to our public rights of way.
Right. And I was going to say, as a reminder, I think just a little bit deeper is that you're entrusted. I mean, you're required to operate the rights of way, to, you know, to regulate them in a way that will benefit the public. And, you know, if, as I'm looking at this from afar, it looks to me like Louisville's saying, well, we want to make sure that we can make it easier for new investment. We want new investment in Louisville. And if you have this system where a company that wants to build fiber has to wait months and months and months, that's going to be a problem. So you're basically saying our rights of way are going to be more efficient. I mean, is that basically the high level?
I would argue, the Councilman Hollander, who introduced, sponsored the ordinance and, you know, got it passed through, you know, he really has emphasized the importance of the public safety and the lack of interruption in the neighborhood. So I know you just made the argument for, like, we want to be a place where private companies can come invest, but I'll tell you, in the formation of the legislation and the passing of the legislation, the higher premium was being placed on, you know, the reason that we believe, you know, this needs to be done is to decrease disruption in the places, you know, around these rights of way. And it's primarily a safety and disruption reduction. Again, like WANDIG is, that's really where we're coming from. And, you know, I don't view this as an economic development activity per se. I view this as, this is streamlining the way access to our rights of way operate. Now, there will be other benefits of working like that, but, you know, this isn't an economic policy. This is really a safety and efficiency, common sense thing to do. And I know it has implications, you know, in other quadrants, but, you know, when you look at the way the legislation was crafted and passed, we spent most of our time really focused on safety and disruption.
It's actually a perfect analog then. I mean, you mentioned it, but I'll note to people that when we were studying Santa Monica, which has one of the more longer running, dig once kind of policies, that their initial concern was literally that the streets would be crumbling from all the cuts in them. And that was, why they embraced that sort of a model. I think that's why a lot of other cities have as well.
Through the course of this whole thing, I've become very sensitive to poles. And, you know, what you'll learn is, you know, there's a lot of shortcut, you know, sort of, I don't know, I think it was sort of hacking that goes on in the pole business, you know, where you will have, let's say, the electric utility decides whatever they need to do, that the pole that's standing in place is not going to be able to structurally support whatever needs to be done. So they need to put in a new pole. Well, they'll put in a new pole in roughly that location, right next to it. And then they'll move their stuff over, right, the electric utility. And then in many cases, you know, they'll chop the pole, right? And then there are two poles there, and we're waiting for all these other communications layer attachers to start moving onto the new pole, right? And so in worst case scenarios, they've actually then cut the pole at the top and bottom, lashed it to the new pole, because one attacher hasn't gotten their truck out. And so there's, you know, there's this sort of cancerous looking monster telephone pole, right, that has, you know, most of a new pole and then part of the old pole, you know, lashed to it, you know. And then this is what we're doing today, right? I mean, and so, you know, I encourage anybody listening to actually just start taking a look at the way, you know, poles look in your community. You know, if you're in a situation where you have these stub poles, lashed partial poles, I mean, that is really because of this sequential attachment activity. And, you know, it might not ruin your day, but, I mean, it really is a different kind of a blight and probably a safety issue overall.
Well, I'm curious. One of the reasons that I tend not to do a lot of talking about polls is that after visiting some communities that have often over a period of many decades engaged in undergrounding projects, I've become very partial to getting as much out of sight as possible. I just think the aesthetics are wonderful. And I'm curious, in a longer term, does the city of Louisville, do you think you can encourage conduit access as well, or are you focused on poles for a long term?
I don't know that we have a strategy, kind of as a city or a community on, how much is aerial and how much work is underground. We certainly have a bias, as many communities do, a new development, of course the bias is to have stuff underground, and a lot of our newer developments are underground. But we are a 350 square mile, merged city county. It's a lot of space, and it's not a small thing to say, let's make a commitment to getting all this underground. It's very expensive. It took a very long time. And so we're really just, kind of trying to make the best of the situation that we're in right now. And so again, reducing extra clutter in the right of way is a priority, and multiple poles in similar locations is part of clutter, can be a safety issue in its own right. That on top of the proliferation of microcells, I think that's a subject of a whole nother show, I'm sure, but there is no slowing down the deployment of fiber as it supports wireless data. We're going to see, tenfold increase in small cell tower work over the next few years. I mean, there's no stopping. There's an arms race for, getting on tablets and mobile phones. And so you don't do that underground. You have to attach yourself to something in the air. And so, I know you have a vision of having everything underground, but I don't think you're keeping track of all of the mobile devices and Internet of Things, and they're all above ground, and they're looking for something above ground.
Yes, you have me there. The wireless access points will certainly have to be above ground.
And there are more of them, right? I mean, more of them all the time, because people go to 4G and then 5G, and pretty soon you realize that you're going to have to be very proximal to these antennas. And the only way that's going to happen is if there's a lot of fiber, supporting that.
I'm curious if you could characterize some of the arguments. I mean, we saw that, I believe, in the city council meetings that the incumbent providers spoke out against these policies. And what arguments did they use?
Well, so, in the lead up to the ordinance, there certainly are, I think if you're used to the way you're doing business, and you have, crews that you send out to do things, then your bias is to say, well, I like it the way I'm doing it right now. And, a lot of it, kind of does center on, I send my people out to work on my stuff. And, I understand that. And, there's lots of interesting arguments to be made around all of that. So that's really, I think, at the core of it, those are where the concerns are, is, the status quo at the moment before this ordinance, really, has a whole set of business practices that, if you suggest we're going to stop working like that, the first reaction you get is, well, this is how we do our work. And, we really want to keep doing the work the way we've always done the work.
Yeah, generally, I don't find that a very persuasive reason. I mean, sometimes it carries the day, but unfortunately, it's one of those things that, if you have fiber all over town, I can see why you wouldn't want to change things. But anyway, I wanted to throw that in there because I haven't found that their arguments held a lot of merit, but I wanted to make sure that we at least gave a nod to them. I'm curious, is there anything else going on in Louisville that, for people who are interested in what cities are doing to improve internet access that you'd like to note?
A lot of the focus of this conversation is how do you really get ultra high speed, cost effective internet? Mayor Fisher, my boss, really looks at this very holistically, and we are certainly concerned about being competitive in that way. But, similarly, we are aggressively working on low-income neighborhoods, sort of what I think of as the new digital divide, and the new digital divide isn't really about internet access in the sense of I have it or I don't. It's the way that you get to the internet, and we have neighborhoods in Louisville where
you know, what's true, they may have access to wireless data. The pricing is so very high relative to what you would get at, you know, in a fixed line at your house that, you know, people don't use the internet, you know, for educational applications and, you know, these things that are a little more bandwidth intensive. And so we're focused on, you know, what can we do to roll out wireless internet in some of these neighborhoods. And we have a mesh network that we've recently put up in one of these neighborhoods, and we're learning a ton by doing this. I just want to say, like, it's not your grandfather's, you know, Wi-Fi project, municipal Wi-Fi project. We're really trying to learn about arrays of access points, how they can be good for economic development for small businesses in the area. Recently, we've rolled out a few Big Belly recycling waste stations. I don't know if you're familiar with that company out of Boston, but, you know, they have essentially trash receptacles and recycling receptacles that have, in the case of the ones we rolled out, you know, wireless backhaul that now in these neighborhoods also have hotspots in between the units, and they're solar powered, solar on top of the unit. And so we've put a couple of these units into this neighborhood. We've been doing public Wi-Fi, and it's really been very interesting to see, now we have people waiting at a bus stop, and they're able to know when the bus is coming, you know, because there's the trash can next to the bus stop is a hotspot, and, you know, it's powered by the sun, and it uses wireless backhaul, so it's very, you know, it doesn't matter where you are physically.
I have to think that in the near future, those things will also be measuring air quality and doing all kinds of other things, too.
Yeah, but I really want to emphasize, you know, while it's fun to talk about 10 gigabit internet to your house, it's just as fun to talk about wireless trash compactors that, you know, also can do other things for you, right? Help you get the bus, maybe monitor air quality, you know, maybe monitor noise levels, you know, whatever that is, right? There's all kinds of, and we're learning that in one of our most economically distressed neighborhoods. It's, you know, it is where our most advanced internet technology work is happening. And I couldn't be happier about that. Like, you know, it's, you know, we're now sort of, we recently stumbled into some learnings around vacant property and the kinds of fires that vacant properties have. Turns out they present real fire risks to adjacent properties that have people in them. And so now we had a hackathon to come up with an ultra low cost smoke detector that can talk to our municipal network. And so now the empty house that's catching on fire can tell us that it's on fire, you know, before anybody can see it, you know, because it's empty, remember? And so, you know, the idea that, you know, we would come up with innovations like this only really comes from actually having the asset in a neighborhood that's distressed, where, you know, we can come up with these, you know, these sort of crazy new ideas that I'm pretty sure you wouldn't come up with in a situation, you know, in a very wealthy neighborhood where there aren't the same kinds of challenges or constraints. We're doing some of our best learning on the other side of the bandwidth continuum, you know, but the slower internet, but Internet of Things internet, you know, broader, you know, everyday use of internet. And then, of course, we're going to have our folks that are looking for the speed and, you know, trying to telecommute and all that. You know, the mayor really sees the whole continuum, and we're trying to work the whole continuum.
Well, it sounds like that's a lot of what Susan Crawford has been calling a responsive city, which I've enjoyed her writings about that and talking with her about that. It's also, I think, the case that when you talk about developing these apps and these approaches, you probably wouldn't be doing it if you had to be paying, you know, per bit or you know, trying to get someone's permission from the telephone company to do it. I mean, there's a lot to be said for being able to build your own network using unlicensed wireless space. I mean, these sorts of things are really important.
Yeah, no, it's really, and like anything in life, I mean, you actually don't really know what you're doing until you get busy doing it, right? And so we're learning as we're trying. And Susan's a wonderful person who, you know, sort of makes the case that this infrastructure, right, is a public good. And, you know, the only way you really can back up that rhetoric is by actually showing people all the different kinds of good that it could do. And that's really what we're focused on. And every day we think of a new value that the network can provide, you know, really validates that whole point. Like, just like the road that you built, you know, or the, railway. I mean, like, you see all the different uses and all the value that's created. You know, you don't necessarily know about all that until you lay the infrastructure down.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on the show and telling us about what's happening in Louisville.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
That was Chris and Ted Smith, Chief Innovation Officer from Louisville, Kentucky, discussing one-touch make-ready policy and what is happening in the Derby City. Send us your ideas for the show. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. You can also follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter, where the handle is @muninetworks.org. We want to thank Kathleen Martin for the song Player vs. Player, licensed through Creative Commons. And thank you for listening to episode 193 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. You can even confuse